Hello, everyone. This is Clarissa Bell, and welcome to my weekly teleclass, where I'll be giving a short topic on an idea intended to expand our consciousness and awareness, and I will be teaching you information about the science of the cards, also known as cardology, and I will be giving readings to those who would like them and as time permits. So, as always, I like to start with a brief prayer just to center us in to the energy of life, to the field of life. So, just becoming aware of your breath and allowing yourself to take in these words. Take in more of the energy of these words. We open in total trust that everything the universe brings us is a gift of love and support. We feel deep appreciation for these gifts and unconditionally accept them all. We see the activities of our day as an experience and expression of our expanded soul awareness and rejoice in all of them exactly as they are. We feel the abundance bestowed upon us by the universe and joyfully accept all the richness inherent in them, and we are committed to an ever-expanding awareness of who we really are. And so it is. Today's topic is the creation of good and bad. And last week I did this same topic, and an interesting thing happened. I forgot to record the first half of the show, so I forgot to record the actual topic. And it was really wonderfully appropriate because immediately after I realized what I had done, I could feel myself thinking, this was a bad thing. And here I was teaching about the creation of good and bad. So it was really rather funny. And it gave me the immediate opportunity to really look at my opinion that what had happened was bad. And I got to kind of make a different choice about it or to see it from a different point of view. And then lo and behold, it occurred to me, well, I can just repeat it. It's worth repeating. It's one of these topics that was going to take several, a few classes to really go into detail. And it's something that needs to be listened to and heard many times over. So I am going to repeat, and here it goes. So for those of you who heard it, here it is again, and for those of you who haven't, I hope you enjoy this lesson. Okay, in the previous classes, we talked about polarity, and just to, we can't talk about the creation of good and bad without also talking about polarity, so just a brief recap on polarity, that life, this life that we're living here in this human environment is an experience of polarity, and without polarity, most experiences would not exist at all. For example, without hot and cold, temperature would only be a concept. It would never be an experience. And for polarity to exist, both sides must exist. It's impossible to have one pole of the spectrum without the other. And we can experience and know and appreciate what one side really feels like only to the extent that we've had an experience of the other side. For example, success cannot exist without failure. We can't really experience what success is without having already experienced failure. Okay, and in order to refresh our experience of one side of a polarity, that means if we've been in one side of a polarity for a really long time, we kind of get used to it. It's almost like you just become numb to it in a way. And so in order to refresh our experience of that, which we've been in for a while, we must alternate polarity. And that's what we're really doing here in the human experience. We've created this human aspect of ourselves, which I like to refer to as the avatar ever since I've seen that movie. And so it's like our avatar our human self is the bigger self's avatar of what it's like to come into an experience of polarity so that it can experience briefly the opposite of what its true nature is, which is God nature, in order to refresh its experience of being God. And so in this human experience, we've created ourselves to be this human self to be basically the opposite counter creating our God essence to be the opposite of who we really are in God. And so we do that by creating negative identity realities. And remember, these are just temporary realities so that we can have the experience of the opposite temporarily, so that we can actually know and experience and appreciate who we truly are. But it's a funny thing happens along the way. So we create our these negative identity realities, and that's part of this human experience, but then we begin to resist them. Okay, so we resist the way we've created ourselves to be as human beings. And why do we resist them? Because we create them to be bad. We create them as being bad. So an identity might be, I am stupid. And then, I mean, you could kind of imagine, just think to yourself, if you think something like this about yourself, I am stupid, then we go, and it's bad to be stupid. So I've created I'm stupid, and now I've created it's bad to be stupid. And since bad is that which should not be as it is, that's what, you know, many people think something is bad, and so, and that means it shouldn't exist, it shouldn't be. And therefore, since we conclude it shouldn't be, then we want to change it, stop it, destroy it, or run away from it. Okay? And so in this chain, we conclude that our negative identity realities are bad. And I'm a failure, and it's bad to be a failure. And since it's bad, I need to stop or change it. And then I use the energy generated from this experience of being a failure to actually try to change being a failure, because I think it's bad. And this is resistance. And so at the root of resistance is our creation of bad, because if we didn't think being stupid was bad, we would just feel being stupid. It wouldn't be anything to shift or change. We would just experience that. And in life, whatever we experience eventually will shift and change. And that's the natural law of how energy works. Whatever we create something, and then we experience it, and then it shifts and it changes naturally. But with resistance just keeps things going, okay? So the root of resistance is this idea that, or opinion that something is bad and it should not be, okay? So and remembering how creation works, whatever we give more energy to increases. And so when we resist, we're using this self-generated negative energy. And what I mean by the self-generated negative energy is, for instance, if you just think of an idea about yourself, if you think, I am good, and then you just feel what that feels like. So a feeling gets generated within you, you know, some feeling that feels pleasant and good. But if you think, I'm poor, I'm weak, just take a moment and just, I am weak, and see what the resulting sort of self-generated experience of that is. It's usually some negative emotion or feeling that doesn't feel good. So even in whatever we think about ourselves, we're instantly creating how we're feeling. That's the sequence of be, feel, do, relate, and have. Be, feel, think, do, relate, and have. So when we're being something, there's automatically a feeling that's being generated from that. So I'm a failure, as an example, generates an experience, and I mean generates an emotion, and then I'm bad, and it's bad to be a failure. Then I use that energy that's generated from this to try to then stop it, because the energy is, the emotion is like energy in motion, and the emotion really usually motivates us or impulses us to act a certain way. And in this case, it's going to motivate and us to try to do something about this being a failure. Especially since it's bad, now we have to do something about it. We have to try to change it or destroy it in some kind of way, or run from it, or suppress it and not feel it. Any of those things would be a level of resistance. So when we resist, we are using self-generated negative energy to try to change something. And through the law of creation, whatever we give energy to gets bigger, okay? Thus, when we resist, we create even more negative experiences, which we then judge as bad again, which we then try to change even more with the energy that's generated from this, which then begets more negativity, which we resist yet again until it just becomes a tangled mass of negative energy, okay? And so thus we say resistance causes persistence. okay, it's going to increase or create more of that which we're trying to push away or that which we don't want. And this is how we actually stay stuck in the negative experiences. And so as a result, you could say, well, resistance really is suffering, because resistance is pain about our pain. And so it's just and pain about our pain, which equals suffering. And our pain is really being caused by a continual resistance of something. So how do we stop suffering? Well, by not resisting. Well, what causes us to resist something? This idea, this opinion that something is bad. So at the root of all resistance, as I said before, is this creation of bad. So let's take a deeper look at the creation of good and bad. How do we create bad? Okay. So first thing we need to understand is that there really is no objective good or bad. You won't find it outside of you in the world anyway, anywhere. Nothing is good or bad per se. You can take any person, you can take an object, and you can measure, you can actually measure something for its size, its shape, its color, its weight, its temperature, its height, but you'll never find be able to measure good or bad. They don't sort of exist in the internal world. This is really, this creation of bad is an internal experience. You say each person is a center of their own universe. We're like these individual vortexes, and we're all viewing life from our own unique vantage point. And there's just really no limit to how many different viewpoints there can be about anything. We have billions of people, and you know, there can be billions of viewpoints about any one thing, and because each person is unique and viewing it from their own unique vantage point. And what could be bad for one person is could be good for another person. There's just really no way to really measure, find some objective view of good and bad that everybody can agree on. So to illustrate this, I am going to just tell a brief story. This story is from the books Psychanics, The Fundamentals, and I think it does a good job of illustrating that, you know, we never know what's good and bad. And so let me find this story. Okay, here. There once was a king in Africa who had a wise and trusted minister, a good friend, who always accompanied him wherever he went. They were truly inseparable. One day, as they were accustomed, the king and his minister went hunting. The minister prepared the king's musket as usual, but this time when the king fired, it exploded, blowing off the king's thumb. The king was most upset at losing his thumb due to the apparent incompetence and carelessness of his minister in loading the gun. The minister listened calmly to all the king's ranting and then replied, as was his custom, "This is good." This sent the king even farther into his kingly rage, and he ordered his minister seized and imprisoned in the dungeon, and so it was done. 3 months later, the king returned to his beloved hunting, and in the thrill of the pursuit, galloped far ahead of his entourage into a wild region outside of his kingdom. He was quickly captured by cannibals who jubilantly took him home for dinner. At their village, he was locked in a hut and closely guarded to await supper. That evening, the cannibals set their fire and prepared everything for their feast. They went for the main dish, the king. As they were tying his hands, they noticed that he was missing a thumb. Superstitious, as most primitives are, the cannibals had a rule to never eat anyone that was weak, sickly, or damaged in any way. They believed that would contaminate them with the defect of the person they ingested. So on they freed the king and sent him on his way. As he journeyed back to his kingdom, the king pondered the loss of his thumb and how that had saved his life. Feeling great remorse for how he had treated his friend the minister, he went directly to the dungeon to free him. "You were so right," the king said. "It was good that my thumb was blown off." And he proceeded to tell all that had happened. "And so you saved my life. I am so sorry for sending you to prison. It is really bad for me to have done so." "Oh, no," his friend replied. "It is good." "What do you mean it is good?" the king exclaimed, astonished. how can it be good that I sent you to the dungeon for so long? If I had not been in the dungeon, I would have been with you, replied the wise one. So, you can see, good and bad depends. Depends on the viewpoint and depends on the time that one is looking. So anything we call bad, we can find a viewpoint from which it is good and vice versa. Some examples of this could be physical pain is considered bad. But without it, really, we'd be hard-pressed to survive on this plane. So is physical pain good or bad? I mean, if we didn't have pain and we rubbed up against something sharp and the pain, and we did not have the pain to alert us that something was happening, to alert us that we needed to pay attention, you know, we'd probably hurt ourselves really seriously. You could see with these bodies, you wouldn't last very long here. So is pain good or bad? That's a question. Homosexuality was considered good in classic Greek and accepted as normal in ancient Rome. But today, in present time, many people consider it bad. So given the time and the culture, same thing is considered good or bad. So, you know, what is considered good and bad changes throughout history and culture? They vary. And they really don't make any sense. And killing is considered bad, but in times of war, it's considered a duty and good to kill. We give out medals for being a good soldier. So is killing good or bad? Again, it depends on our viewpoint. So this is what I mean by there is no objective good or bad. So good or bad is really an internal opinion. For there to be an objective truth about anything would mean that the truth must be in effect all the time and apply to everyone and everything. Gravity, for instance, is an example of an objective truth that can be measured and is applicable to everybody. But there is no universal code, no universal standard of good and bad that everybody can agree on. We will never achieve agreement among humans as to what's good and bad. Therefore, bad and good too, but bad, we're going to really be dealing with bad here. Bad can never really be an objective truth. What is good and bad depends on the perspective from which we're looking, and thus is always a subjective reality. It's an internal mental creation. So, and it's being created from each of our own unique viewpoints. So who is the cause of this experience of good and bad? Who is the creator of what's good and bad? We each are individually. We each create what's good and bad. Even if we adopt a viewpoint from others and we're taught things from some code, it's still our choice to adopt that code. And even if there's a code, there are many different viewpoints or interpretations on that code, for instance, the Bible or any kind of holy book. So it's still our own individual internal creation. And so nothing is really good or bad except in our minds by our creation of it. So what we want to do is to really become conscious of and take responsibility for being the creator of our life, and that includes being the creator of good and bad in our experience. The identity of I'm not caused, which is that one of those, the first negative identity that we create in order to come here, because in counter-creating our essence of God, I mean, God is the cause, God is the creator, but to come here in the human experience, remember we're having this experience of polarity, so that this a part of ourselves gets extended, this human part, and one of the main, the first identity that we create to counter-create that is I am not cause, okay? And so the identity of I am not cause or I am not creator wipes out our awareness of being the creator. It doesn't change the fact that we're the creator, but it wipes out our awareness of it, okay? So not being aware that we are the creator does not negate our being the creator of our experience. It just gives us the experience of not being the cause of our experience. So it gives us the experience of being powerless and in all its various forms of victimhood. So not understanding that, and likewise, so not understanding that we are the creator of bad makes bad appear, makes us unaware that we're creating. It makes us it appear as if it's a characteristic of some outside event or thing. And so this illusion that good and bad exist in the external reality is just another, it's one of the main paradigms of the human species. So the two, I am not creator and I am not, that bad is something that's outside of me that's created by God or some outside authority. These two things kind of work hand in hand, and they're actually sort of the linchpin and the mechanism for this human experience, and it's what really keeps the human experience going. So when we want to begin to expand back into who we really are, we need to understand that we have created this identity of I'm not cause, and we've also created our experiences of bad. And when we can really begin to know that, we can begin to take responsibility for it and really begin to shift and transform our lives. Because most of us believe that bad exists and that we have nothing to do with its existence. I mean, that's how we were taught. And again, through this identity of I am not cause that I talked about just now, we deny that we are the creator, and we think that bad is an inherent property of some external thing or event decided by God or some other authority. And we say we create ourselves to be totally unconscious that we create bad, and we do that by projecting it into the external and then denying responsibility for it. And it continues to make it seem as bad as if bad is something that we have nothing to do with creating, and it's outside of us. Okay, but now what we want to do is to wake up from this self-created trance. Yes, we put ourselves in a trance to come here into this human experience, and so that we can have the experience of the spectrum of polarity. But now what we want to do is to wake up from this trance and to know that we are the creator of our life and the creator of bad. We want to stop suffering, because remember, suffering and resistance go hand in hand, and resistance, the root of resistance is this creation of bad, our opinion about whether or not something is bad, and then if it's bad, we feel justified in changing it, attacking it, destroying it, or suppressing it. And we use the negative energy generated from all this to do this, okay? So in order to stop suffering, we must stop resisting our creations. We must learn to experience them, give space to them. And at the root of resistance is this bad. So we really have to get a handle on this creation of bad to really know that we are really creating it, and that we do have the power to come into an understanding of that. And in coming to an understanding of that, we can take responsibility for it and learn how to actually unravel from these negative identities. And that's what we're going to begin to do in the next class. So we want to get to the point of that nothing is good or bad, but everything has characteristics, prices, and consequences. Everything has its nature that's made up of characteristics. So nothing is good or bad, but everything does have characteristics, prices, and consequences. And as we learn and begin to understand that, we can begin to deal with each thing that comes into our experience according to its nature, its characteristics, without distorting that nature with our opinion of bad on it, okay? We learn to deal with it based on its nature, but without bad. Okay, so that is the class or the topic for today. And next week I will go into the next phase of this. How to, if nothing is good or bad, then how do we deal with the seeming goods or bad? So I will go into that next week. And if anyone is interested in more detailed exploration of the creation of good and bad, I recommend the book, Psychanics, The Fundamentals by Michael Thomas Powell. And I've never found this in the store, so I think you'd have to order it, but you can find it online. Okay, so that is our discussion on the creation of good and bad. And let's just take a moment to just kind of just take a deep breath, because we're going to switch gears here. Just allow yourselves to just briefly close your eyes if you can and just take it in, just this information, and just really feeling the energy that's present here. No need to figure anything out or do anything with it. Just let it be. Okay, so we're ready to switch gears now, and I'm going to go into the science of the cards. And the science of the cards, also known as cardology, is an ancient system that is said to date back to Atlantis. And been around. It's become more widely known in the past 10 years, and it was really, its secrets were kept preserved by the Order of the Magi, which is an ancient esoteric society that dates back to Egypt, and it was kept a secret as from the information that I've gathered from it, because it was to be revealed at a time when man could really learn to use this system in a way to help him transform, and apparently that time is now. So the past 10 years, it's really become more widely known. The first book that was printed on the cards is called The Mystic Test Book by Olney Richmond, and I believe it was 1894, and it was called the Mystic Test, like T-E-S-T, like taking a test, and it was called that because it was meant for anyone not to just believe what was written in the book or to just believe the information, but to really take the information and test it and use it to test it on their lives. So that's how accurate this system is that it has a book of it's a book of records for every year of your life. First of all, it's the system for which our common deck of cards was created, which is really a representation of our Earth's calendars, with the 13 suits corresponding to the 13 lunar cycles, the four suits corresponding to the four seasons, the 52 cards corresponding to the 52 weeks of the year, and the numeric value of all the cards plus the joker equaling 365 days and a quarter. And so when I do readings and when I talk about the system, I don't have cards in my hands. It's the system is really mathematically formulated through using an esoteric math, and you could say that you have there are cards, and the cards are sort of what's called quadrated. They're put into different formations, and for every year you can read where certain cards will be for each birth card for 90 years. It's really a complicated math, but it's called quadration. And so you could say this system has like a book of records for each birth card for 90 years. And so for each year you can look at from the year you were born, and you can look at a set of cards, and it basically just tells the energies that are present for any one person for that year. And when I do readings, I'm doing them in context to what's going on in the person's life. For instance, if there are certain cards that talk about relationships, if a person is married, I will read it differently. I will read it in context to them being married, as opposed to someone who may be single, because the cards have different meanings. So when I do readings, I read in context to whatever's going on in a person's life. So it's a book of records, and you can go back and you can and look in your past and look at what cards were present and see what was actually happening in your life. And this is one way to really, really test whether or not the system is accurate or not. And it really is uncannily so. So it has a book of records that one can look up and follow. And if one is interested in doing that, they could buy Cards of Your Destiny by Robert Lee Kent, which is a book on the card system. And it has a record of every birth card for up to actually 99 years. I think it repeats after year 90. And it also gives you a description of the cards and where the cards fall in each of the periods of the year. So it's a really good book, and if anyone wants to begin to learn how to do the system themselves, they can take that book, and they'll be able to really do readings for themselves and their friends in a short period of time. It looks complicated, but it's really not very complicated. So that's one aspect of it, is that you could do yearly readings, and there are also 7-year cycles as well as 13-year cycles. That's more advanced. So that's one aspect of the cards. And the other one is that it helps you to understand yourself and what you came in here to do. And so for each year, day of the year is governed by one of the 52 cards. And with that card is a particular set of characteristics, challenges, gifts and talents, as well as karmic things that we've come in here to work out and karmic gifts that we came in here blessed with. So you could say that each card has a karmic package, and there may be 52 different karmic packages. And actually, it begins to be more complicated because that particular card, so the day you were born, whatever day governs that card is what's called your birth card. There's also a planetary ruling card, and each of us has a planetary ruling card. Well, today actually is a Leo day, and I'll talk about that when I talk about what the day is today, because they only have their ruling card is the same as their birth card. So you could say they're like a double whammy of that card. But a birth card really helps us to understand what we came in here to do. And the planetary ruling card acts more as the way that we've come in here to express what we've come to do. So those are the two main cards that really can help us understand what we came in here to do. It really is more, we know, it just more gives us confirmation of what we already know. And I know for me, it just gave me a permission to really be more of what I already knew I was. So that's a little bit about the general cards system. And today is July 27, 2010. And today is anyone born today would be an Ace of Clubs birth card. And it's a Leo day. And Leo is the sun, is ruled by the sun. And so the ruling card is ruled by the sun, which is ruled by Leo, which is ruled by the sun, and the birth card is the sun card. So the birth and ruling card are the same. So Leos really are dramatic versions of themselves. You know, if you think of Leos, you think of people on stage, they're very dramatic and very expressive. And this may be one reason why, it's because they have this double birth and ruling card. So it really accentuates what this birth card is. So Ace Clubs is known for, it's the search for knowledge. It's new. They love to study. They love new knowledge. They love to learn new things. So they have a passion for knowledge and learning. And many of them are known as collector of books and information and teachings of all kinds, okay? And it's one of the semi-fixed cards. There are two sets of semi-fixed cards. And so this is the Ace of Clubs, and they're like karmic twin as the Two of Hearts. So these cards kind of work hand in hand. And so they're very fixed in nature, okay? But an ace also makes them an initiator because the aces, they're new, they're ready, they're raring to go. So this is someone who's an initiator but also fairly fixed in nature. And they're very intelligent, and they like to be in the company of other intelligent people. And while they do enjoy being with other people, they do need time alone. All aces need time to themselves. And, again, they are intimately connected with their karmic twin, the Two of Hearts. And two is partnership. Heart is relationship. So this card would also be someone who's really seeking an ideal partnership or an ideal relationship. So relationship is very, very important to them. So knowledge and relationships would be how I would really kind of sum up this someone who would be born with this birth and ruling card. Okay, so that's a bit about the card system, and I'm going to unmute the line and see if there's anyone on the line that would like a reading. Hello? Anyone like a reading?
Fuck with anybody but me and you.
Okay, so you like a reading. Let's see. And just say your birthday again.
25/59.
3/25/59. Okay. So that would make you 51.
Yes.
Right? Okay. And that would make you a Jack of Clubs, Two of Clubs, Double Club, Mine. You're a person of the mind. Okay, let me pull up your, I think before I gave you a description of your card, so I won't do that, but I'll go right to your spreads this year and see if I can give you some more information than I was able to give you last time. So let me pull this up. Okay. So do you have a particular question?
I'm more concerned about, you know, coming out of this experience and going into a more positive energy. Not to say that this is not in its own way.
Mm-hmm. So, and what are you experiencing? You said coming out of this energy. What energy are you experiencing?
Unemployment.
And what is that making you feel?
Surprisingly, I'm not feeling anything. I feel very good.
Okay. So, and why are you, but you're wanting to come out of it because?
I have to take care of myself.
Okay.
And my two kids.
I see. Okay. All right. So right now you're in the Mars period. Okay. So let me see what I can find. Okay. Well, you have a nine of spades in this period, and you have a king of clubs, and which is being a leader or someone who could be a leader in terms of disseminating information to others in a large way or to audiences. Okay. But you also have a nine of spades underneath that. Nine is about letting go. So I'm getting the sense that there may be something that you need to let go of. I'm not completely sure what it is. Because in your two of clubs spread, you have a queen of hearts. And that usually for a man represents a woman.
My ex-wife.
Okay. Well, so there might be something around that. And also, too, you have a nine of spades Pluto, which is a challenge for you with this. So there may be some challenge you might be having around and fear. It seems like, okay, so you have a queen of hearts, three of diamonds. So three of diamonds is either worry about money or it's finding way or it's creativity and versatility in money or in what you value. So I don't know if there's money worries around your ex-wife or something you have to let go around that with your ex-wife, but it feels like something like that. I don't know. I mean, are you relating to any of this at all?
Yeah, I am, because she sent me the divorce papers, but she tried to do something in a very slick way about some money that she had gave me, but now she's trying to collect it back. And I was telling her that, you know, I'm not going to pay her back this money. So she was trying to inadvertently do some conniving things behind the divorce papers and then come back after me later.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate to it.
Okay, so it may mean you're going to have to really kind of see what that means for you on a deeper level. What's your wife's, your ex-wife's birthday? Go ahead. Four what?
Four, 54.
Okay, so April 4th.
No, February.
February 4th is her birthday. I don't need the year, just so if she's February, she's born February 4th?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, she's a eight of spades, three of spades. Okay. Because she is showing up in your cards. Wow. Okay. But she's showing up as a good influence for you. So this is going to be interesting. and as a result card. Wow, that's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out because she's an ace of spades. Her birth card is an ace, eight of spades. I'm sorry, her birth card is an eight of spades. You did say February 4th, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in your Two of Clubs spread, she shows up as someone who is who's beneficial to you in some way, and she shows up as your result card, and that means at the end of the year, by your next birthday, some kind of way, this ends up being a good thing, okay? So I'm not clear, you know, I don't know the specifics of everything, but see, the result goes hand in hand with this challenge. So you got this nine of spades challenge, and what you'll end up with is an eight of spades. Now, nines is anything we have to let go when we have a nine, and especially in a challenging position. So there may be a way that you might have to let go of something, either some thought forms about her, some habits that you've had regarding her, but there's going to be some kind of letting go in some way, and there may be a way in which you're resisting letting go, because in this challenging position, usually we resist letting go, and it may just be if you really let this go that life will support you in ways that you can't imagine. And maybe if you can let go of this, maybe there's some kind of mental tug of war going on in your mind about her. Maybe if you really let go of that inside yourself, she may show up differently with you. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Because my thing is, I don't think we are, I don't think we complement each other in the state that she's in now.
What do you mean by the state she's in?
Okay. I'm at a different awareness than she is.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's hard for me to try to relate to her on where I am and also accept her where she's at.
Okay, so
that's been the problem with the marriage. You know, as I told her, I'm trying to love her for who she is,
mm-hmm.
yet she wants to try to control me.
Okay, so, but, yeah, well, that's an interesting thing, because even in that, there's a way in which you can accept that someone's trying to control you. You see what I mean? Given if she is where she is, and remember my talk about, you know, being with someone, dealing with people according to their nature and the characteristics of where they are. And it's not labeling bad on that, but we have to see who a person is, where a person is, and where they are in their lives. And if a person is doing what they're doing, and we know that, there's a way in which we can learn to deal with them in a way that's actually productive for the both of us, but without this kind of tug of war or going on within us. And maybe, you know, maybe you can just accept that this is how she is. This is who she's being right now.
That prohibits me from being me.
How does that prohibit you from being you?
Because her lack of trust. You know, ever since we've been married, she always felt like, you know, I'm out here doing being a Miss. How can I say it? I'm with some being pessimistic, you know, in a sense where she thinks that I'm always with someone else, another woman.
Mm-hmm.
Never been, you know, trusting me. And like I told her, it's not me, it's you and your other men that you dealt with. You just don't have a trust in dealing with your own self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can't do anything to convince you that if I'm not doing something because your belief is so strong that you already hold me guilty.
Okay, so what is it that you would like to see happen?
I'm just ready to move on. You're talking about release. I'm ready to just move on.
Okay, and what's preventing you from doing that?
Well, we have to come to agreement on this paperwork. And the only thing that I'm protesting at this point, because I don't want to, once I say, you know, this is over and she signed and I signed, I don't want to have to come back and deal with her later on another front about something that should have been dealt with in this front.
Okay, so what would it take for you to let go? It sounds like, yeah, what would it take for you to let go?
What would it take for me to let go?
Mm-hmm.
For her to say that, or her lawyer, whatever, to address, draw up the papers and say that, you know, I would not, she would not be coming after me for this $6,000.
Okay.
And then she can have everything that she came in with, and I can have everything I came in with. I'm willing to do that.
Okay. Well, you can try that. And are you willing to let? Are you willing to do without the $6,000?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to have to pay her back. I gave up 3 years of my life and my job to go with her, and she decided that she didn't want to be married anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it left me in a situation that I'm dealing with, which I don't have a problem with, because it's been teaching me how to grow in the uncertainties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm dealing with life as it is. As it unfolds in front of me, I deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is, you know, I don't want to have to keep repeating something that I don't have to. And like I told her, you know, you're a very conniving woman. You're spiteful.
Okay, well, can I just give you some reflection back?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I, like, inquire into you, the way I'm experiencing you is that you immediately go into her and what she's doing and how she is.
Okay.
And you know, that may be the case. I don't know her. What I want to encourage you to do is for you to then go inside within you to see where there is some kind of matching energy. Otherwise, she wouldn't be in your experience the way she's in your experience. And so it would be really, I think, useful for you to see, because obviously it's triggering a lot in you, the way she is with you. It's triggering something within you, and I would encourage you to see what is triggering in you, what beliefs you may have about yourself that's triggering in you. Because it's these identities, beliefs that you have about you that are actually somehow drawing and matching the energy of your experience with her. And you will only really be able to change it when you go in and can change it at the root.
Okay.
Does this make any sense?
No. Say that again. Okay, I understand the matching energy, I think.
Okay, so and for instance. So
me
for instance,
is also, what's in her is reflective in me.
Well, it's mirroring something, and it's your job to see and go and hunt for what it's mirroring in you, because what it is, what that thing that's being mirrored in you is part of the dance with her. And since you want to shift this situation, you need to see what it is in you that's sort of a match to this dance with her. So she's given you an opportunity. This situation has given you an opportunity to go deeper inside yourself to probably discover patterns that you have been unconscious about. So, for instance, one way you could do that would be, as you said, when you think about her, now you just said, now she's evil, she's conniving. Did you use that word? Well, I want you to say it again, what you feel about her. Okay, say what you said.
I feel that she was, you know, very conniving. She can be, you know, very spiteful.
Okay, so right there. So what does that make you feel about you?
I can't say that I have that, I can relate to that same energy.
Oh, okay, well, okay, so just follow this. She's this way. So she's being this way, and what does that make that mean about you? She's doing this thing to you, and she's all this stuff, and who are you? Who are you that she's doing this to you?
Am I? Who am I?
Mm-hmm. Powerless?
Oh. Because I'm trying to understand who am I to make to allow her draw this energy from her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go to bad. So she's this way, and is it bad that she's being this way?
It can be. It's not that it's bad with me. I just understand it for what it is. You understand what I'm saying?
I hear the words you're saying, but it feels like you want her to be different.
Yes, I do, but I can accept. Well, I can't really accept.
Right, yeah, exactly. And this is what we're trying to get to. What is it about? I mean, you're saying, well, I can accept her, but you're not really accepting her.
Oh.
And because it's what she's doing is causing you some level of pain. Is that right? Or discomfort or something. And I'm trying to get to the root of this pain.
Yes, the root of the pain is this $6,000, okay? And the fact that if I go a little deeper, allowing me to go a little deeper, is the way in which she went about going about this divorce, okay? And I can see, now I can relate to your energy thing, this matching energy or mirroring energy.
Mm-hmm.
Because she probably felt like I was trying to beat her to the punch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to explain to her, you know, it's not that I'm trying to beat you to the punch of divorcing you, because I didn't get married to get divorced. But if you are that unhappy, I don't want you to remain in this and be that unhappy. And I think she interpreted like, you know, I was trying to get out of the marriage. Because like I had told her before that, you know, we were on a foreign service duty. And she had another assignment that she had applied for in Colombia, I think it was.
Okay, David, I'm going to stop you here because we're getting you going. See, this is part of the club energy, a lot of mental thinking. I want to get you to your feeling.
Okay.
Because this is where you're going to have the opportunity to shift it, to change it.
Okay, tell me.
Okay, so you said you could feel the matching energy. If so, there's this sort of like thing going on where you're trying to beat each other to the punch, or in her perception. Okay, so again, can you feel, just take a deep breath, and I want you to feel it with your body, not your mind. See if you can drop down into your body and feel what all of this makes you, what does this feel like to you in your body? Is there a feeling that comes with all this?
Feel like they're being deserted.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Good. Deserted by who? I am. Is there an I am statement you can come up? First of all, where do you feel it in your body?
In my, in between my chest and my heart area.
Okay, I want you to go into the, like, imagine you just can just go into the center of the energy of this heart area and see if you can go right into the center of it and give that energy a voice, as if it's an emotion in your body. See if you could give it a voice, and see if you could get to I am.
I am feeling deserted.
Mm-hmm. I am alone, would that be?
Oh, not alone. Where it really took me, since you asked me to drop it.
Okay, just stay in the energy.
Yes.
Tell me, okay, where did it take you?
It took me to my mother and my father.
Excellent. Okay, what information do you have about that?
I felt like I was deserted as a little kid. There was not that I was deserted, but I felt like there was a time when I felt deserted.
Okay, excellent. This is my point. This is, you just discovered a belief and a negative. I am deserted, and you see it goes way back. And this energy, so what I want to tell you, this energy has been running, and what we do is when we are unconscious to these energies and these identities that have been running, we keep actually creating situations that reflect that until at such point that we begin to become aware of it. And when we become aware of it, we can begin to then do the work of de-energizing that particular pattern so we can begin to create a different experience for ourselves.
Okay.
So all of this that's been going on with her, one of the things that it's doing is helping you to become aware on a deeper level of some energies that have, you've been operating inside of.
But, Clarissa, that's what I have gotten to that point. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure I can do better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I'm able to deal with in terms of my ex and the way she did this, and the way that I'm responding to it,
mm-hmm.
I have to commend myself because typically I think I would have responded a lot worse and I probably been a lot more affected by it had I not been, had I not arrived at this state of being that I'm in right now.
Okay, congratulations. That's good. That's great. And what I'm saying, and we're almost coming to the end of the class, I want to kind of complete this, which is why I really interrupted you, is because I really want you to see how it's really important to really keep working at the level of the identity. Because when you work at the level of the identity, you will begin to show up differently, and she will show up differently with you. Or if she doesn't show up differently, you will show up even more able to work and deal with her, and then the outside events will begin to shift. And these things have layers to them.
Yeah.
Okay? So, I mean, and this sounds like a really big one that got set in really early, and there, and I'm going to be teaching in the next few classes about how to begin to unravel these things. Because it's you know, it's one thing to do it in the mind, but you can't really unravel it in the mind. It has to actually be discreated or de-energized on an energetic level, emotional and energetic level. And that's where I'm wondering if you really could use some help with. Now, I don't know your situation. Maybe you've done that. You tell me.
I think I have, but not to the level that you maybe can introduce something to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone through a lot of introspective studies. And one that really comes to mind is when I went through Barbara DeAngelis' program.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with her?
Yes.
Okay. I went through her tape series, Making Love Work.
Right.
And that was the most cleansing moment in my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good. Well,
same pattern that you're talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
Had to feel it and not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then later you come back and you write it down.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually see it.
Right.
And I had a moment where I was molested.
Mm-hmm.
Felt the penetration.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to, you know, deal with that a lot clearer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it's nothing that I'm unwilling to go and tap into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, these things are processes.
Yes.
And, you know, they're spirals. So you can tell what you need to work on by what happens in your life. And this is happening with this situation with your wife or ex-wife. It's happening. So obviously there's still more work to do on this particular one, okay? And we just do what's in front of us to do, so this is yours to do. Obviously you get the opportunity to work at it at a different level and a deeper level, okay? And, you know, life is always presenting us with these opportunities. And I in the, you know, prayer I said today is, you know, if we could really be open to the idea that everything that the universe brings us is a gift of love and support, and that the universe is obviously bringing this situation to you, and it is a gift of love and support because it's giving you the opportunity to go even deeper, to come into an even deeper relationship with yourself, and in really being able to really get more to the root of this so you can really fully shift it and transform it. And it's not just that then that it will change on the outside with your wife. It'll change your experience of yourself. You will come into a more loving relationship and experience of you. Can you feel that?
Yeah, because okay. That's something that I feel like in the past I've had problems with women.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, you know, very committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Of being hurt.
Yes.
And that was another discovery, an aha moment, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And today, you know, I'm not afraid to be me, as eccentric as that may be at times. I'd much rather be alone than to be with somebody just because.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of discoveries, you know, going through Barbara DeAngelis' material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, then now the work begins, because now applying it in the in our life is the, you know, how we actually begin to integrate all these changes. And with that, you know, comes all the other things that come up. We have many different identities, you know. You can imagine a human being is filled with negative identities and positive identities. And so, you know, I think it's a lifelong process. And I think it's more a matter of learning how to navigate it and ride the wave of it and enjoy the whole ride. So, you know, I think you're doing wonderfully well. I really commend you on your commitment to yourself and all the work you've done and all the work you're doing, and you actually being here sharing yourself on this call. I think it's really wonderful, and I know that you are going to just continue and expand even more and really begin to transform even more of these things within you to create a beautiful life. So I know we were at the end of the hour, and but I just want to encourage you to just keep becoming more aware of yourself and what it brings up in you in any of these dealings with your wife and the attorneys, and just to keep going in and then keep doing what you know how to do at the present time to really work within. And then that will inform you as to what actions to take, okay? And if you want to call in again, call in again, and we can do some more work. So okay. How's that? Are you good to move on from this conversation?
Oh, yeah. I understand there's a time limit.
Okay. All right, David. Well, so that's what it seems like you're going to be dealing with this period for the next few weeks at least, okay? Really dealing with this situation and dealing with your you know, who you are being and whatever you discover about yourself in this time period. And it'll shift. Will shift, okay?
That's what I'm expecting, the shift to happen with this job situation. And I go back to school next month.
Mm-hmm.
My doctorate, so.
Yeah, things will shift. I mean, I see in Jupiter you've got two of spades and five of hearts. That's a change in relationship status. So just keep doing the work, you know, the energy work and doing what you feel motivated and inspired to do and what comes to you to do. And it will lead you to the next thing. And but you're on a good path, okay, with good intention set for yourself, and you can't go wrong.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I'll, you know, talk to you again soon, and have a wonderful day.
All right. I'll probably send you an email, because I would like for you to refer me to some of these books that you're speaking of.
Okay, sure thing. Just shoot me an email, and I will definitely give you that information.
Okay.
Okay. All right, and to everyone else who's been listening or who will listen, thank you so much for being a part of this, allowing me to share myself in this way, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye.